Financial Empowerment, a production of the California Society of CPAs and CalCPA Institute. I'm Bill Spaniel. Purchasing a first home can be a bit traumatic. After all, most people who are looking to buy their first home are likely young and usually have had no prior experience with making a purchase that will take up a huge chunk of their income for years to come. We asked Rob Seltzer, a Los Angeles CPA and personal financial specialist, for some pointers that will reduce a first home buyer's anxieties. Hello, Rob. Welcome to Financial Empowerment.
Hi, Bill.
I want to talk to you today about being a first-time home buyer. There's often a lot of trepidation when buying that first home because you've never been through the process before. First, how do you figure out how much home you can buy?
The general rule is that you should do 36% of your income. For example, on a national average, the average household income is $56,500, and that would mean that your monthly payment should be about $1,700.
And that's for the house directly, correct? That figure doesn't include utilities and other stuff.
Correct. The way things have changed is it used to be that people were allowed to get loans for more house than they could afford. It's my experience that it's sort of switched to the other way around, where the lending guidelines have just sort of gone back the other way, where basically you sign your name, you could have a loan 10 years ago, and maybe 11 years ago now was like 07 when everything fell apart. But now things are very tight. It's more difficult to get a loan in terms of credit scores and other assets that you need to show. I'm finding it more challenging for my clients to qualify for loans.
Should I qualify for a loan before I go looking for a house? Or should I contact a real estate agent first? What kind of order should I follow?
The answer to the first question is yes, because then you know what you truly should be looking for, and so you're not wasting your time under some misconception that you can afford a certain house or neighborhood that's out of your price range in terms of what you can qualify for. So you wouldn't go through a realtor for that because they would not be the one who handles the loan. Your bank or mortgage brokers who you would go through. Unfortunately, there are a lot of unscrupulous mortgage brokers out there in terms of doing a lot of bait and switch, promising you something and then not delivering. I would really place a lot of value on referrals from friends and family that have used someone that's trustworthy, that's been around for a period of time, that someone you can depend on.
Is it a good idea to get more than one quote for a loan?
You know, rates float. So that, you know, if you get a rate today and then you go to someone else a week from now and someone's lower, it could be because the market dropped and it's not really fair to have that comparison to the other party. So you can do that, but I generally don't for clients because that's the mortgage broker's job. They're trying to get you the best loan through, you know, whatever funding sources they have. And that's why you really have to be with someone that you can trust, because if it isn't, then yeah, I would go to more than one person because there isn't a fiduciary responsibility there. The mortgage broker's just trying to make a buck and get you a loan. And if there's one loan that pays him a higher commission, then that's what he's going to do. You have to really be with someone that you trust. And if you don't have, you know, a referral source that's dependable, then yeah, I would, you know, have inquiries on, you know, more than one person. And the other thing that you want to do and related to the loan is find out about the closing costs. And that's something that you can shop around. Escrow, title insurance are something where there are various vendors. You know, you need to find out what those costs are. And that's not going to change based on going to one person a week later. The only thing that changes is the interest rate. But the title and the escrow are going to be what they are, you know, whether you get a quote now or 3 weeks from now.
What about government loans like from the VA or FHA? Who qualifies for those?
Unfortunately, I don't have any veteran clients, but for FHA, the loan limits have gone up. They were 636. They've gone up to 679, 650. One of the, you know, real attractive things about the FHA loans is the low down payment with conventional loans, you generally need a 20% down payment, or you will be required to have mortgage insurance. Let's say if you have 10% down, you can have an 80% first, and then you would have a second for 10%. But now, home equity lines, the interest on those are no longer deductible. You can get a loan where the down payment is only 3.5%, then obviously that's attractive. That would require a credit score of 580 or higher. If you're between 500 and 579, you would need to make a 10% down.
Do you recommend using a real estate agent when shopping for a home?
The answer is yes. In real estate transactions, you're going to have someone represent you. And it doesn't cost you any money to have someone do that, because the commission is split between the seller and buyer's representative. It's paid by the seller. So it doesn't cost you any money to have someone represent you, so there's no downside in doing so. If you just go up to some open house and don't have someone representing you, and then you're just dealing with the seller's agent directly, you're not in the strongest negotiating position, because the seller's agent just wants to make a deal. He's going to get paid by both sides of the transaction, so that's really not in your best interest. And you have to also realize that real estate agents also are not ones that have a fiduciary duty. They want to make a deal. That is how they get paid. So you have to take what they say with a grain of salt. If you talk to a realtor, there's never been a bad time to buy. The way I would choose a real estate agent is, someone who's an expert in the neighborhood that you're looking for. There's some real estate agents that go all over the place. And for example, my wife and I bought a house in our neighborhood several years ago. We used a friend to represent us, but the seller's agent was someone that we've got to know who lives in the neighborhood. Not that I'm looking to sell. I'm very happy where I'm at, but I know that when the time comes, and let's say that I am looking to sell, I would definitely use the seller's rep, because she knows our neighborhood much better than the woman who, while very successful and very competent as a real estate agent, does not deal with our specific neighborhood on as regular a basis and as this other woman does. And I would be more comfortable with that. They would know what really has gone on in the neighborhood. They don't have to get up to speed by looking at comps. They know what's going on because they deal with it on a daily basis.
Well, you mentioned neighborhood as one of the factors to consider in buying a house. What other factors should one consider when buying a home?
A neighborhood is really important. For example, I remember advising a client, and I'm in the Los Angeles area. They were in Hollywood. They were good with elementary schools, but then after that, it was a bit sketchy. And so they moved to a suburb that had its own school district that's very highly regarded. I told them that you're buying your house right now, and you're spending more than you did before, but your interest is tax deductible on this. Unless you take money out of the house or have an adjustable loan, but assuming it's a fixed rate loan, your payment's going to be the same, meaning that your cost of educating your children is not going to go up. If you stay in that neighborhood and have to go to private school, well, that's not the case. Private school tuition has gone up much faster than the rate of inflation. If you're looking at that in terms of, if you have a family and children, being in a neighborhood where there's schools that are good, where you feel comfortable sending your kids K through 12, then that's a huge savings over lifetime of your child in terms of their K through 12 years. The other thing that I would say in terms of looking for a home is you don't want to be the best house on the block, because you're basically limiting your upside. On the flip side, if you're one of the lower end houses on the neighborhood, and I'm, just speaking more of square footage than or lot size, then you're piggybacking off of those other homes. You're going to have a better value and chance for appreciation than that other home that's the best that, your street or area.
The critical part of buying a home is negotiating the actual amount you will pay for it. Do you have any tips on how to negotiate the payment?
with negotiations, you can never go back. There's always going to be give and take. You can't go with your best and final offer as an opening offer. You have to give yourself room to go up just because that's how the game is played. I would give yourself some wiggle room so that you can go up and also know what your limit is. Don't overextend yourself more than what you're comfortable for. I've heard different stories from people. I have a client that where the neighborhood where they're looking, houses are going for a significant amount over asking. They've been outbid by all cash offers more than a couple of occasions. And I think that that's more particular to that neighborhood that they're looking at, because I've seen others where houses stay available for quite a while. It's all in how things are priced, and I guess the way these realtors do it in the neighborhood where those clients have been looking have deliberately underpriced the homes to set off a bidding war and just get it over with. I think it's not something where you can say what the blanket situation is, because it's very different. The cliche of real estate is about location is very, very true, because not all areas go up and down in the same way. If you're going to compromise, I would compromise more on square footage than I would on location. Because you can always do a remodel or do something, you know, some houses are limited to what you can do in terms of the space, but most houses you can expand in some way.
Any other thoughts on this subject, Rob?
When you are looking for a home, two things. The appreciation that has happened over the last 5 or 6 years has been unbelievable in most of California, certainly in the LA area where I practice. You can't go into the transaction thinking that the next 5 years will be the same as the prior 5 years. It's just not sustainable. It can't happen. Mm-hmm. When you are buying the home, you know, don't go into it with those types of expectations. You should have the thought that you really love this house. You want to be there for at least 5 years, and I would say closer to 10 before pulling the trigger, because there are some headwinds, certainly in California, to home prices increasing. Interest rates are creeping up. The limitation on mortgage interest to 750 from a million, and the limitation on property taxes, you know, state and local income taxes, are all going to increase the cost of buying a home, which is a headwind to appreciation. I would be happy with where you're at if the market does have a hiccup and declines, say, by 10%. That shouldn't be the end of the world, because you're not looking to sell. A loss is only a loss when it's realized, not when it's on paper. Really be happy with your purchase. Don't feel that because of the appreciation that's happened that if you don't get in now and you don't buy this house, that you won't ever have the opportunity to do so again.
Our thanks to Rob Seltzer for providing tips about purchasing a first home. We appreciate your listening to CalCPA's Financial Empowerment Program, which was produced in February 2018. If you would like to comment about our show, have a question for a CPA, or would like to suggest topics for future programs, write us at financialempowerment@calcpa.org, or simply visit www.calcpa.org. You can search there for a California CPA who can help you save on taxes, better manage your investments, or budget for those rainy days even sunny California sometimes has. Just click on the Find a CPA link. This is Bill Spaniel, and you've been listening to edition 205 of Financial Empowerment, a production of the California Society of CPAs and Cal CPA Institute.